It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Ahwatukee neighbors band together to thwart cunning burglars. Battle over heat closures of trails gets hotter. Kolache Cafe has big expansion plans. And Cardinals to build multi-million dollar facility after complaints by players. Our first article, from the Ahwatukee Foothills News, Ahwatukee neighbors band together to thwart cunning burglars, by Paul Mariniak. They enter this country from South America, mostly Chile, through the United States' relaxed tourist visa program, usually with fake passports, males and females ranging between 18 to 70 years old. They fan across the country in small groups, ready to pillage well-to-do neighborhoods. Some were cops in their native country. They're armed, not with weapons, but with jamming devices that neutralize Wi-Fi alarm systems and can even disrupt police radios. Other times, they just cut the electrical power line to a targeted home. Wearing hoodies, face masks, and gloves, they target homes that back into washes, parks, and other darkened parcels. They have researched their targets so well, they know their marks layout and head directly to the master bedroom once they break in. They use rental vehicles, fake IDs and documents, stolen license plates, multiple burner phones, and encrypted messaging apps to communicate, plan, and carry out their crimes. Formerly called South American theft gangs, they victimized at least 12 Ahwatukee homes over the last 14 months and over 140 across the valley in the last year or two, to the tune of over $3 million in valuables. And last week, Phoenix police brass and detectives, along with Councilman Kevin Robinson, met with about 75 Ahwatukee Custom Estates residents to discuss ways they can thwart those thieves. Other homeowners joined online for the meeting, organized by two of their neighbors, realtors Christy Ellis and Katie Hale Lambert. But Ellis and Lambert weren't about to stop after police provided the homeowners with a list of actions they can take to better protect their homes. After the four-hour-long discussion, the two realtors talked with the attendees about getting together for some group activities. They laid the groundwork for what police said may be the best defense against the burglars, being good neighbors. "We're looking at more events to get to know our neighbors," Ellis said, "things like a block party, organizing the women for monthly bunco games, and things that will keep us in communication and aware. We also chatted about a group who can help watch homes while people are away," she added. "In other words," Ellis said, "it's all about going back to the basics of looking out for our neighbors." Sergeant Gregory Gibbs, Property Crimes Unit Supervisor, laid out a lengthy to-do list for the homeowners to defend their homes from South American theft gangs. But the realtors' efforts to strengthen a sense of community among the Ahwatukee Custom Estates neighbors can be just as effective in thwarting the cunning thieves, said Assistant Police Chief Ed DeCastro. "I understand the weather's changing, but right now, while the weather is good, take advantage of it," he told the group. "I would suggest maybe going on walks in your neighborhood. The good old-fashioned thing of getting to know your neighbors thwarts crime, and you never know what you might see." "Criminals want to go into a neighborhood where it appears that nothing's going on. It appears that maybe people aren't around, or people are locked in their home, or whatever," DeCastro continued. "So while I'm cognizant of your concerns, I would also just suggest that just going for a walk, or maybe sitting out on your front lawn, whatever's appropriate for your personal schedule, it's not a bad thing. Again, activity deters criminal activity, and this goes for everyone." Unlike last year, when the South American thieves broke into 10 homes in Ahwatukee, only two this year are believed to have been hit so far. Gibbs said he is aware of only 5 burglaries so far this year in Phoenix that are believed to be the work of the thieves. "Last year at this time, there were dozens," he said. "The thieves haven't slowed down nationally, with cities from coast to coast recording hundreds of burglaries tied to the loosely knit but well-trained burglars." Recently, 7 Chilean nationals were indicted in connection with a burglary of Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow's home. The burglaries at the homes of other professional athletes across the country also are considered the work of the South American thieves. In the Valley, only 6 Chilean nationals have been arrested and convicted. 3 were arrested together by Scottsdale police, and the other 3 in an incident involving Phoenix detectives. Gibbs said the 2 men and a woman arrested in the latter bust were tied to some of the Ahwatukee break-ins. While police would not discuss any specific crimes, Gibbs provided a lengthy list of actions for homeowners to reduce their chances of falling prey to the burglars. They include upgrade. Upgrade your physical home security system, Gibbs advised. If you have a video surveillance system, try to get one that is hand-wired and that has a battery backup, which would defeat any power cutting or Wi-Fi jammers. Make sure that you hide the DVR that records this footage well inside the home, or they'll take that as well. If you have a system, please retain that footage for at least 2 weeks. Fortify. Consider glass breakage sensors, motion detectors, or a system or company with either alarms or monitors, or they have a security that will respond to the location. It's not uncommon for security to arrive prior to police. Make sure your alarm system covers every entry and exit point, not just the points you believe they may try. They frequently go up on the second story to make entry, if possible. Install a siren on the exterior of your house, so when your alarm is tripped, your neighbors are aware. Put high-quality locks on your side gates. Install security doors or shatterproof glass on your windows and doors. Bolt it. The only reliable safe is one bolted to the floor. One detective suggested a heavy-duty gun safe might be best. If the safe is portable, the thieves will take it. Document. Gibbs advised taking photographs of jewelry and other valuables and store them in another part of the home. In the event of a burglary, police can circulate the photos to pawn shops, and they can help detectives identify stolen merchandise in the event of an arrest. Be aware. Watch for unusual people. Vehicles that are driving slowly during unusual hours. Vehicles that you're unaware of. Vehicles that nobody knows about. People that no one knows. Be discreet. Please limit sharing high-value purchases or travel plans on social media. Light it up. Shed some light on darkened parcels if your home backs into a wash. They're looking for an approach route that is concealed and dark, Gibbs said. Motion detector lights and cameras in the back would be very helpful. That was Ahwatukee neighbors band together to thwart cunning burglars. Our next article, Battle Over Heat Closures of Trails Gets Hotter, also by Paul Mariniak. The battle over more stringent heat-related restrictions on Phoenix Mountain and Preserve Trails continued February 27th before the Phoenix Parks Board amid a barrage of scientific and other data from both sides. Later this month, the board will decide whether to begin closures at 7 a.m. rather than 8 a.m., and more significantly, whether base closures on a specific temperature forecast rather than wait for the National Weather Service to issue an excessive heat warning. But unlike last October, when the board directed city staff to formally present the new closure guidelines for its consideration, opponents praised the board. That was particularly true when city fire department officials indicated their main argument for more restrictions is related to chronic staffing shortages rather than the safety of hikers who use the trails on hot days. We think the board is finally asking a lot of the right questions, said A.J. Johnson, an avid hiker on South Mountain, who represents one of the several groups opposing more restrictions that have banded together under the umbrella group called Keep the Trails Open. Unfortunately, all of this should have been done before the October decisions on additional restrictions, he said. It's clear the closures weren't properly vetted, discussed, or shared with the public. It also apparently shows our coalition has engaged with the public far more than parks or for the fire department, many hours more. During the meeting, the board took a deep dive into the number of mountain rescues the city has had to undertake, as well as a breakdown of medical conditions of rescued hikers that included where they came from. The most contentious data set involved a survey the city conducted online from November 17th to February 9th that an Ahwatukee professor at Arizona State University tore apart for the way questions were phrased. Dr. Deidre Pfeiffer systematically analyzed the survey, suggesting the way some questions were worded helped city proponents of the higher restrictions get the answers they wanted. A total of 1,081 people responded to the survey, and only 553 were Phoenix residents. The residents showed that 66% answered no when asked if the excessive heat warning is the right threshold on which closures should be initiated, though only 44% liked a specific temperature threshold and 15% were unsure. Asked about specific temperatures for closing trails, the top three were 110 degrees, 312 in favor, 115 degrees, 250 favored, and 105 degrees, favored by 222. When asked the time of day closures should be levied, the response no closures drew the most yes votes with 286, followed by 251 who favored 8 a.m. and 206 favoring 7 a.m. Pfeiffer, an ASU professor and the principal investigator for the Arizona Research Center for Housing Equity and Sustainability, ripped the survey as designed to support the predetermined decision of closures, stating she and her husband spent 54 hours in January and February talking to hundreds of trail users about the issue at five South Mountain trailheads, and told the board the city needed to do a lot more than just take a survey on the issue. Closing the preserves will affect the lives of thousands of people, and engaging with trail users and neighbors offers insight into the daily experience of using the preserves. There's been no effort to meaningfully engage with trail users and neighbors. Trail users are a highly diverse group, ranging from children to seniors, natives, Arizona natives, to Mexican immigrants, casual neighborhood walkers, to hardcore bikers in Phoenix to East Valley residents, Pfeiffer said. And we spoke with a lot of folks from Tempe and Chandler as well as Phoenix. Most of the people that we spoke with were unaware of the trail closures issue, and this is really important because most people don't follow what's going on at City Hall. Those who were aware of the issue heard about it through the media, and I think this is really important to let this sink in because it puts into question the survey. Pfeiffer also said, most of the people who use the park during the summer actually reported having very positive experiences, and this is also important because these positive experiences are not reflected in the presentations that we're hearing. Johnson said that if short staffing in the fire department is the real reason for seeking tighter heat-related restrictions, a limit to close the parks at 105 degrees Fahrenheit might not be the end game. Resource constraints are happening year-round, not just in summer, and we'd be naive to think PFD only cares about fixing this in the summer months, he said. Relying on patient charts involving rescues, the fire department told the board that 82% of the 136 rescues that occurred on South Mountain in the last 4 years were Arizona residents. Most rescues occurred on moderate or moderate difficult trails. It said that the total number of rescuers on the mountain and preserve trails in Phoenix from 2021 to present was 615. Of those, 437, or 71%, were Arizona residents. City officials also said South Mountain accounts for 23% of all rescues throughout the year and 18% of those that occur in the summer. City Parks and Recreation staff said that even during heat warning days, 142.6 miles of trails remained open, with another 133 miles closed. However, South Mountain and Camelback Mountain were major exceptions. All 128.3 miles of South Mountain trails were closed, as were all 4.3 miles of Camelback Mountain trails. Johnson said, the discussion of rescues glosses over the fact that the total number of them is low, and getting lower, totaling less than 1% of all fire department calls in the city last year. City officials also said that volunteer park stewards help minimize the number of rescues by interacting with hikers. Last year, 57 volunteers donating 700 hours passed out 20,000 bottles of water and made 29,000 hiker contacts. Johnson also suggested that political contributions from the firefighters union have played a role in the debate. He singled out criticism by Councilman Carlos Galadon Elvira, who at a council meeting several weeks ago said firefighters were being subjected to hateful social media comments in the trail closure debate. Phoenix Firefighters Local 493 is Councilman Galeno Elvira's single largest campaign contributor, accounting for over 11% of his funding, Johnson said. This financial relationship raises questions about whether his defense of the closures reflects the union's self-serving agenda rather than the broader public good. On the broader issue of closures, Johnson said, the notion of restricting public access to save one life, as implied by current policies, is short-sighted and illogical. Instead, the city should explore alternative solutions, such as increasing water access points, enhancing trail education, and investing in proactive stewardship programs. These strategies, proven effective in places like the Grand Canyon, offer a balanced approach to ensuring safety while preserving access to our natural spaces. Opponents of more restrictions have a website underscoring other problems they find with the city effort. KeepPhoenixTrailsOpen.org. That was Battle Over Heat Closures of Trails Gets Hotter. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Kolache Cafe has big expansion plans, by Jerry Capel. The Kolache Cafe, which opened in Ahwatukee Foothills in January of 2021, selling sweet and savory Czech pastries, recently opened two more East Valley locations and has two more in the pipeline, but the owners have their sights set even higher. Jose Leal, who owns the Kolache Cafe with his wife Bebe Leal, and investors Vincent Porzio and Dominic DiAgostino, said people ask on a daily basis for them to open anywhere from Peoria to Scottsdale. And thanks to winter visitors, we get a lot of requests to open up in the northern part of the Midwest, too, he noted. The cafe on South Gilbert Road and East Southern Avenue in Mesa opened in November of 2024, and one on South Alma School and West Guadalupe Roads in Mesa opened in January. Another on South Val Vista Drive and East Willis Road in Gilbert should open by May, and one at East Mark Mesa at East Elliott and South Ellsworth Roads is slated for late 2025 or early 2026. If all goes well, Kolache aficionados even further afield will get their wish. Our plan is to go national, Jose said. If the four new locations succeed, in the next couple of years we'd like to start franchising, he added. Kolaches are made with flour, butter, eggs, milk, sugar, and nutmeg. They can be topped like a Danish or filled like a pork bun with various ingredients. The Kolache Cafe, which is open from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily, offers 12 breakfast kolaches, including combinations of ham, sausage, bacon, or beef with egg, and cheese, sausage and gravy, or brisket, mashed potatoes, and cheese. Jose called them breakfast in a bun. 7 lunch kolache flavors are served after 10:30 a.m., including pepperoni pizza, Italian meatball, barbecue pulled pork, and smoked chicken and cheese. They make 18 kinds of sweet and fruit kolaches, including caramel apple, blueberry, key lime, Bavarian cream, and Oreo cheesecake. Savory kolaches are $3.89 each, $20 for 6 or $39 for 12. Sweet kolaches are $2.89 each, $15 for 6 or $29 for 12. Cinnamon rolls are $3.75. The Leals are native Arizonans who learned about kolaches while they lived in Texas for a few years. The bready treats are popular among the large Czech community there. I remember going to a baseball game and somebody had brought them over, Jose said. All of a sudden, we were hooked. When the Leals moved back to Arizona in 2014, Jose wanted to start a business instead of working for someone else in corporate America. He said he always had a knack for baking and cooking and remembered how much he liked kolaches. So he started making them in their kitchen, marketing them on social media, and selling them online. The Leals have a blended family of 7 children from age 8 to 22, and the older kids would help deliver kolaches all over the valley. Transitioning to a brick and mortar presented challenges, however. The Leals signed the lease for their first kolache cafe in a former bank on East Ray Road at South Ranch Circle East in Ahwatukee in February of 2020, just before the pandemic hit. In addition, they had never worked in the restaurant industry, and the cafe was their first business venture. Bebe, who is still an account manager for a staffing company, supported the family while it got up and running. Not to mention, kolaches aren't a household word here as they are in Texas. Jose said they visited Houston and asked random people if they were familiar with kolaches. We didn't find one person who did not know what a kolache was in Houston, Jose said. Here in the valley, he estimates, less than 1% of the population knows about them. Still, the Leals persevered, spreading the love of kolaches. Though they live in Mesa, Jose said it was by far the best decision to start in Ahwatukee because the locals strongly support small businesses. Now, their regulars include people on their way to work who want a grab-and-go breakfast, groups of friends who settle into spotless farm chic dining room which is flooded with natural light, or businesses that order hundreds of kolaches for meetings. The Kolache Cafe also serves coffee from the Buzzed Goat, which is in the same strip mall. The Leals decided to expand into the East Valley to be within an easy drive of all locations. However, it's taken longer than expected due to lease, construction, and permit delays. New economic challenges have arisen too. When we first opened this restaurant, eggs were $48 for 80 pounds, Jose said. Now they're $178. Sugar is 4 times what it was 4 years ago, he added. Nevertheless, the Leals haven't raised prices. We are fortunate that we sell a product that can be absorbed through the volume, Jose noted. He added that their kolaches might even be more in demand because people are watching their spending. Matt and Whit Stewart of Phoenix were in the Kolache Cafe one morning with their daughter, Andrea, 11 months old. They said the prices are one thing that has kept them loyal customers since it opened. For breakfast for a family, it's one of the best values we have found, Matt Stewart said. He added that the Southwest breakfast kolache is his favorite, while Whit said she likes the spinach, egg, and feta or sausage jalapeno versions. Jose mentioned that the Leals hope to open 20 more kolache cafes throughout the valley. They felt it was the right time because they developed a following, have strong systems in place, and have a solid team, including a new district manager to help with quality. That's the most important part for us, is making sure that our customers can go to any of our locations and have consistency in food, consistency in service, and consistency in the environment. That was, Kolache Cafe has big expansion plans. And finally, from the Phoenix Business Journal, Cardinals to build multi-million dollar facility after complaints by players, by Brandon Brown. Arizona Cardinals players rated the team's facilities the worst in the NFL, but team ownership said there is a $100 million plan to address these issues. The NFLPA's annual survey of working conditions for players, which was released February 26, ranked Arizona dead last out of all 32 teams in the league. The Cardinals' worst grades were mainly based around the team's facilities. The survey takes into account 11 different categories within teams: treatment of families, food, cafeteria, nutritionist, dietitian, locker room, training staff, weight room, strength coaches, team travel, head coach, and owner. The NFLPA said 1,695 players completed the survey, which amounts to about 77% of its membership, or 52 players per team on average. The Cardinals dropped from number 27 last year to number 32 in 2025. The top concern for many Cardinals players is the need for an updated, modernized, and expanded team facility, according to the report. Nearly every space within the facility is described as too small, especially the team's locker room. Only 24% of the players said that the overall locker room size is adequate. When it comes to locker room, training room, weight facility, and dining area, the Cardinals received either the worst or second-to-worst scores in the entire NFL. Our goal is to provide the best possible environment, facilities, and resources, and to give our team the greatest opportunities to succeed. We're working hard to achieve that, the Cardinal said in a statement in response to the survey. Last season, we shared with our players the plans for a new training facility at the existing Tempe location with a targeted completion date of 2027. The team has hired Rossetti, a leading architecture firm that has worked with several NFL teams on their new facilities, and the upgrades to the practice facility in Tempe are currently in the design process. The total cost of the upgraded facilities is estimated to be around $100 million. We will continue to explore all the other ways, large and small, that we can get better in every single area of our operation, the Cardinal said in the team's statement. Heading into the 2024 season, the team made major upgrades to luxury seating and adding other amenities aimed at fans seeking to spend a lot more to enjoy a premium experience at home games at State Farm Stadium. One of the new additions is a high-end members-only club at the stadium affiliated with Sam Fox's Global Ambassador Hotel. Outside of constructing new facilities, the Cardinals received low marks from players in the family treatment and ownership categories. The survey said that Cardinals players want access to pre-game sideline passes so they can see their families before games, and they said that team owner Michael Bidwell was only somewhat committed to building a competitive team. In many of the other categories, the Cardinals received higher grades, but were still toward the bottom of the NFL. The biggest bright spot for the team was head coach Jonathan Gannon, who the players rated number 8 in the NFL. The Miami Dolphins were the top-rated team in the NFLPA survey, with the Minnesota Vikings and the Atlanta Falcons coming in respectively 2nd and 3rd. That was Cardinals to build multi-million-dollar facility after complaints by players. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.